Close? Okay. All righty. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 29th of May. I would like to ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. We hope everyone had a wonderful Memorial Day. There were a few activities in and around various communities. The weather cooperated, and so I think all in all, it was a wonderful day and a great opportunity to honor our veterans for their service to our nation. So hopefully everyone did have an enjoyable time. As we look at the agenda, the consideration of the minutes, we are going to pull the minutes of 5:17 and the special meeting of 5:22, basically the minutes that we kind of received was printed off and wasn't the actual ones that I think we wanted to submit at this time. So I would just entertain a motion to pull these minutes and refer them to next week if that's possible.
Yeah, so moved. We need to have the correct documents in there for right. Our approval.
Yeah.
Second.
Been moved and second to defer the minutes from 5:17 and 5:22 special meeting to the next week. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Public comment number one. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to comment? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on. Additional item first. There's no public hearing, so first of the additional items is the consideration of changing the public hearing date from May 29, 2012 to June 5, 2012 for Resolution 1299 to set a public hearing on the tax increment revenue loan agreement in the principal amount not to exceed $500. I believe the reason for this change was due to the fact of the publication notification deadline that was called to our attention last week. And so in order to comply with the publication deadline, we needed to move this date.
Move the change.
Second.
It's been moved and second to approve the change of the public hearing date. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Of course, where's my mind? So, motion is adopted. But I all of a sudden had a senior moment. All righty. Okay. Moving on to consideration of Resolution 12-100 FY12 Appropriation, Assistant R. to Lisa Markley.
We're going to set a record for the number of appropriations we do in 1 year, I think. I'm requesting that we amend the appropriation again. One of the situations in which whenever we only appropriate 95%, obviously I'm checking everybody's budget on a weekly basis to make sure that they're going to make it because we can't let them go over. And the situation arose with community services that their rent payments are right now over by $10,000 almost, and their inpatient hospital and court-appointed counsel is over by about $11,500. They're going to be pushing it to make it for the rest of the fiscal year, or they can't make it the rest of the fiscal year, I should say, without appropriating the remaining dollars. So that's what the $8,040 is. That's the rest that brings them to 100% appropriation. Countywide services, that was an oversight on my part. There was an additional $5,380 that we budget amended for special law enforcement. So now I'm putting it in so that it's spendable.
Any questions to Lisa Board?
Okay. I would like to comment that when community services budgets are put together, the part of the budget that is the chemical treatment portion, which we pay out of the supplemental fund. Every year we do the best we can based on the previous year. This year has been very high usage in that area. That's where $11,500 of those dollars are over at. I think Deb can attest to the fact that that isn't always the case, but we put money in there not knowing what we're going to spend, and it's exceeded it this year.
So your best case scenario right now, the fact that we only appropriated 95% to some of the other departments, that we may be able to stick with that, but you're going to be looking at that carefully and
with
department.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's possible that before the end of the year, we may have to make another adjustment.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
It's a department by department situation
right.
at this point.
Right. Okay. Okay. With that, I would entertain a motion for approval of Resolution 12-100.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of 12-100. Any further discussion, comments? Roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 12-100, FY12 appropriation is approved. Thank you, Lisa.
Deb, we're going to make it?
We'll make it.
Uh-huh.
I already warned him. I'm pulling claims if we're not.
So. Okay. Okay, next on the agenda is a discussion of next steps for CPAT report, planning and development, Leanne Harder. Good morning.
It's been a while since we've actually had a conversation on CPAT. We've brought it up several times in passing, and as the board well knows, my time has been pretty well spent for the Government Restructuring Committee, and now with that work finalized, I want to take an opportunity just to follow up with you to see what your expectations were of the planning development staff in regards to CPAT report. A few things I want to bring up. I did draft, and I'm not married to this by any means, I shared that with Rick just as I handed out just a simple questionnaire, survey, or whatever it may be. For you all, when you go out on your liaison assignments with communities, to ask them what kind of services they might see a role in the county playing, similar to animal control and law enforcement. This was brought up both in the CPAT report as well as the GRC final report, too, that the community being in the role of providing a certain level of technical assistance. So I just brainstormed different services, everything from marketing, public relations, to capital improvements planning. And then getting a feedback from the community, would you be interested on an annual fee or an hourly rate, or just that's not even something we want to do? There may be some of these things that are done for free, too. But, again, I'm not married to this by any means, but I wanted to get out there for some discussion. That's one item to follow up with from the stakeholder meeting that was held in February that I believe you're going forward with.
Was there a reason that you didn't put a column which would indicate no interest?
It just says if your community would not be interested, please just leave the service road blank.
Okay.
It says that.
So we would. So would it be suggested that as we go to these various meetings, that we would announce this information or see that they have it ahead of time, or is it a plan to submit this to the various councils and so forth, and then we can then respond when we come by just referencing it?
It's entirely up to you. If you did want to proceed with this, you could do a couple different ways. You could direct us to send it out to them in advance under Board Supervisor's letterhead, just explaining the intention of it. Just kind of getting some preliminary feedback, and then when you go meet with them, you can have a discussion. I don't know how often you're going and meeting with the communities, whether it's monthly or quarterly
I think the opportunity for something like this, now that we have a format in front of us, helps guide that, and I like the concept of what you just talked about, but I'd like to hear from the other two colleagues whether they think this would be appropriate. The more advanced information we have, the better it's going to be received, and then they have an opportunity to really have a chance to think about how, you know, they could engage with the county for future plans and development as well. So I guess, you know, I can see some real pluses from this, and it really gets to the heart of what we were talking about earlier and in the earlier reports, is that open communication and dialogue within throughout the county could well be served if we increase that opportunity in some way.
And I should note, these are not strictly planning and development types of services.
Right.
They're pretty all-encompassing.
Right.
All-encompassing. Just a few other things, and then I'll turn it to you for some feedback. I reviewed the CPAT report again, and just some things that are short-term items that I think we could manage internally, but with some direction from you all, are the mission statement for our department. We did set aside some time, and I think it was late February, to do that as a staff level, and then I had an unfortunate incident. We had to cancel that. Hindsight being 2020, I'm glad we had to cancel that because I think it'd be short-sighted of us to just have that done by staff. We may have a very different mission statement than if we engage you all in, as well as the Planning and Zoning Commission Board of Adjustment. But that's definitely something that we could look at in a six-month time frame. Our local foods, we're able to get back on that now with some assistance from Iowa State Extension. Looking at possibly just taking one of our staff members, and I've even thought of who this may be, and just dedicating that person to work solely on these items. And then we'd take another staff member just to work on development review, and just instead of bringing another full-time individual on, just use what we have and seeing how that can play out. Just throwing some ideas out there. We're also getting Connect Iowa up here, which is not a direct result of the CPAT report, but kind of some heightened awareness of broadband as a result of this and local foods. We also, in the very short term, could do an audit of our wind energy conversion systems, which is a recommendation in here, and look at the small wind innovation zones, which Linn County, Johnson County, maybe Wright County have all employed, and then also look at solar standards for solar. I think that's the next wave hitting us. Again, a recommendation. These are internally items that staff really could tackle if you would want us to. And then guiding us in some sort of visioning exercise, which is really the all overarching recommendation CPAT report for the Board of Supervisors, to have a clear vision that would guide everything else, and that with that some capital improvements plans, which we as planners are trained to develop CIPs. Those are just some things I just wrote down. You know, the other things, the facade paintings, those are external activities that I don't feel comfortable we as a department should have a role in. But I'll just leave it at that and turn it back to you.
And I know there's interest. I went to the COLO council meeting last month, and that was one of the things that they asked about, was the possibility of some sort of an arrangement where they could take advantage of the planning and development. And I think you and I had a conversation here just a week or so ago that your predecessor, that was one of his plans, that his intention was to make your service available to the small towns in the county, and that really never went anywhere. So,
and now I shared that with Paul. That was really the carrot that pulled me here from Fort Collins, the opportunity to be able to do that. And the time was not right. And that was a good 14, 15 years ago.
And I know they have, some of the towns have concern. I know I got, last year I got a call from, I think she was on the council in Collins about, you know, what the county's regulations are as far as manufactured housing. And, you know, they just, these small towns just, struggle with any kind of that planning and development or zoning because they don't have, the full-time staff or the expertise to address it. And I think they lean pretty heavily on their city attorney to make sure that, that they're doing what they need to be doing. But I think they would like to take the next step and go beyond that and maybe have a little bit of a vision where they're headed in the future. So that was definitely one of the things that we talked about at the COLO meeting last month.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'll just kind of take these one at a time. The form, I really like the concept. It's overwhelming,
as I look at it right now, I would want us to really consolidate a lot of these things down into some broad stroke. We're not going to work out the details in going and asking this question, so it's more of a broad question. Would your community have interest in assistance with some of the planning and zoning, some of the development issues? I think Board of Health has to be included on something like this, because I know there's interest in that from a lot of communities, and really streamline it down to where it's more broad-based, and it gives us the opening to go back and explore, is there a way to do this? Would it be hourly? Would it be a set fee? Or is it something that the county can just pick up as we look at going forward? So I'd encourage us to work on massaging this form and get it down into more of those broad-based strokes, but I really do like it. Staffing, Leanne, I really appreciate you offering up you and your staff to continue to take more and more and more. But as I read through the CPAT report, it becomes clear to me that we do not have, in its current structure, we don't have the staffing level necessary if we're really going to take the CPAT report to heart and go forward with it. And that's something that we've got to determine. I mean, it sounded good, and I think we were all impressed and vested in February. Reality tends to set in as we get closer to the new fiscal year, and we've got to see where we are on that. I've been looking at anything and everything, which would include a full-time staff member all the way to doing nothing. But I'm really intrigued right now by something more in the middle, which would be to explore the possibility of contracting those services out, where it becomes a service that the county's paying for, but it's not an employee housed by the county, either physically or position-wise, housed by the county, and we end up paying for it. I want to explore all of that. I think it is time, and I appreciate you being here today, it's time for us to get back focused on that CPAT report for a multitude of reasons. Your accident, the fact that we were working on government restructuring, the fact is the CPAT report for the last 3 months has been sitting on a shelf, figuratively gathering dust. And it's time for us to get going on it and get focused and start to make some decisions along those timelines, which is going to involve a commitment from us as we go through. And then the other thing that I'd mention is the article in the paper, I want to say it was yesterday, on President Leith at ISU looking at hiring 200 new people at Iowa State to do, biodiversity things, and really I viewed it more as an economic development kind of mechanism for Iowa State. We need to make sure that we're focusing in on things that have a synergy, things where it's not just us trying to pull the wagon, but we're jumping in with ISU and Ames and other local entities to see if we can continue to move things more rapidly. So, I mean, that's my gut reaction. I really appreciate you coming forward with this, but I look at this and I start going through it, and for me it's overwhelming to look at all these things, so I'd really like to consolidate them down.
Well, I concur with what you're saying, Rick. I think, again, this is part of the first step, again, of where the discussion should lead us, and I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of how can we narrow this down to where it's doable, where we can actually be able to engage our communities in a meaningful way, and we at the same time be in a position of working with staff, understanding what is actually possible as we move forward. The idea of the contracting for services may be the best avenue as we begin to launch some of these new initiatives, because having the resources to actually do that, sometimes you may need to lean on someone outside, but I think it has to be coordinated from within. So there, and at the same time, Leanne, I'm real concerned, and you've stepped up to the plate time and time again in this last year at the board's direction, and we've got to be very mindful, and you've got to be able to also tell us, whether these things are doable, and how much can you kind of give guidance and leadership through, because everything to date that you've been a part of has been done well, and we don't want to see anything slip from that. But we're also concerned about, as an individual, you can only accomplish so much in a certain time frame. So how can we work with you And I think through the structure we have now with the liaison structure, we wouldn't necessarily have to have a full board there, but at some point we are when it comes down to some of these topics that Rick is just talking about. So it comes back to what I mentioned last week. It may be time for us, as we look at this report and other reports, is the formalizing a few of our meetings around these informal topics so that we could have that workshop, we could have that dialogue, we could bring other people in that kind of help formulate the vision that we'd like to go. And with your help, I think we can do that. But I do think, as one of the things that I've appreciated from both Rick and Paul, is that when we have these things before us, we need to also put a timetable to when are we going to get to it, you know, and let's begin to move that needle to make it, to see if it is feasible for us to do it. So I really do appreciate that suggestion as well. So hopefully within the next, month or so, a few weeks from now, we can engage further in this conversation, working with Paul and your conversation, however we want. But I do know that Rick has taken a great lead in the economic development part with the other communities. And so how we can pull all of those factors together, I think is going to be very helpful for us all. So I look forward to continual discussion. But I looked at this, but I wasn't really sure exactly what was the best format to use. And if we could work on the restructuring idea and you're good at this, I've seen time and time again, by narrowing it down and putting it under certain categories, and then suggesting some of the language that you reference may be a good starting point. And then this becomes the checklist at the end that we look at and say, well, yes, well, you know, here was a couple of the areas. And then we can kind of then group them together and see what are the areas that appear to really be the things that the communities really desire most of us. And then we could narrow in on that. So I really like that, and thank you so much for that. Good. Anything else?
Any direction at all out of this? You have any idea, walking away from the table, what we're asking you for? Okay. Yeah. Let's start with this form, and I'll be glad to work with you on it. Can we see if we can find a way to narrow this down into major categories rather than individual services?
And that I have from the COGS are excellent models, and they have service questionnaires I have already. So, I mean, that's done.
And so that's one thing. I would say a second thing is it is time for us to start the process of figuring out what, if any, staffing, and that for me could include contracting it out, it could include an employee, what, if any, staffing we're going to bring on to have more of an economic development focus, what that role will be and how it'll go. I think that starts with you, helping us to understand what that might look like. And so I think we're asking you to go forward with that. And the final thing that I hear us asking for is let's make sure that this CPAT report stays high on our radar and that you're keeping us reminded of some of those goal timelines that they had laid out and the decisions that we have to make incrementally to get to those bigger decision points. And we'll just count on you to keep that in front of us as we move into the summer. That's the things I heard us asking for.
I think, about narrowing this down, because I think, honestly, I think if you took this to the small towns, they'd check yes on everything.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
So.
Yeah. Which is why I didn't put for free on it, too.
Right.
I knew it would just be a check and a line down.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you so much. All right. Great. Okay, moving on on the agenda, we have consideration of the FY13 Projected Case Management Cost Report. Deb Shilroff, our CPC.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Actually, this item was supposed to be on the consent agenda, and we're still in my office kind of getting used to improving our skills with the agenda center. So,
okay.
But since it's here, I'll just briefly tell you it's a report that a cost report that we complete every year to establish our reimbursement rate from Medicaid for our case management program. And so it's due June 1st. It just establishes that rate. It's what we bill throughout the fiscal year. And then we do a second report. That's typically due by the end of September, and then that would be our actual report, where we look at all the actual costs, submit that, and then there's a cost settlement between the county and Iowa Medicaid. Most of the time, we have been conservative with our rate so that when the cost settlement time comes, we actually get a little bit more money back from IME than have to pay in. So we really approach this on a conservative basis when we submit it in the projected format. So that's how that is.
What is the method that is used in trying to arrive at the cost allocation that is identified here? Is this in collaboration with providers, with other counties? Just walk me through that.
Okay. That report in front of you is a cost report just for case management services. And so it's just the program that's case management program that's operated through the county. It's very likely that we look at changing that as we start looking at redesign and what direction we go in if we pair up with some other counties and do something a little bit different with our case management program. But right now it's just a standalone cost report for the case management program operated through community services.
Mm-hmm. How consistent has the $26.53 been through the years?
Well, this is a little bit different. We started billing on a 15-minute unit 2 years ago. Prior to that, case management could be billed on a monthly unit, and we were around $200, $210 a month for our monthly unit. We were consistently in that ballpark. This new unit of service, the very first year that we did it, and we've learned from that, our unit rate was about $18 per 15-minute unit of service provided. And we've been able to really take a close look at what truly can we bill for that the case managers are doing, what kinds of documentation, along with the face-to-face contact with the clients, the collateral contacts with providers. And so we have this report that the case managers fill out every day, and it's pretty much minute by minute as far as what they do, and so we can capture all of the billable contacts.
So what I'm hearing is the $26.53 is a good, solid estimate, but it's on the conservative side of good.
Yes.
And solid.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the lower rates in the state. We get that information from ISAC after all of the case management units turn in their cost reports.
Okay. I move adoption of the projected case management cost report.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of the projected FY13 case management cost report. Any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Deb. Okay. Moving on, consideration of MICA's request to transfer FY12 asset funds from Family Development Service to Emergency Food Pantry, the amount of $6,469. Both Deb and welcome Arlene McAtee, Director of MICA.
Good. Thank you. Yes, Arlene submitted a request to move these dollars from one service area to another area within their fiscal year 12 allocation. Arlene will talk a little bit about the two services and why it's being requested. The $6,469 is the total allocation from the county for family development services. And they haven't drawn down any of those funds this fiscal year for family development services. And I'll go ahead and turn it over to Arlene to talk about why that is.
Thank you for this opportunity to discuss this matter. There have been a series of unfortunate situations that have occurred for us with our staffing in Story County. Family development through ASSET funds our work with family financial fitness counseling and general family development that people who might not be eligible through FADS or our early childhood programs can still get the family development service that helps them to work towards economic self-sufficiency. So it's been a very valuable service in Story County, and we've been funded to perform that work for a very long time. The emergency food shelf, of course, provides emergency food to families. We are now at a once-a-month level because the need is so high. The number of families who've been coming to us for emergency food has doubled over the last 3 years. There was a little dip a year ago because we moved, and it took people a while to figure out where we were, but they're all back, and we're seeing a high level of service. What happened this year is that we had turnover of our staff position 3 times in 9 months for the person who was doing the family development. You know, people took other jobs, people had husbands who were transferred, people had family situations. That's a very high rate of turnover for us. Each time then we had to bring a new person in, train them for family development, make sure they had the financial counseling experience or training that was needed. So they would come in, we would be training them, and they would be gone. They'd come in, we'd be training them, and they'd be gone. We did bring in a staff person from another county, from Hardin County, who was trained probably late winter to start helping us to get that done because we realized that we were not going to expend the money. But more importantly, with family development, you're talking about something that's relationship-based. And so when those relationships keep turning over, families have to kind of back up, wait for the new person to get caught up with them, and then move forward. So we thought if we could bring somebody who was already trained in from another county, they could pick up some of the families that were out there and work with them longer term because we were pretty certain that she would still be here. When the last turnover occurred about 30 days ago, we sat down and we looked at it and we said, you know, we just have to stop. This isn't good for families to keep trying to give them somebody new, and especially somebody new who's not very experienced. We're going to have to try to figure out something else. And we have hired a new person who will start next month. We recruited somebody who had community action experience, who already is a trained family development specialist, who's worked in the FADS program and supervised staff in that program, so that we knew we were getting somebody who could come into the job and from the day that she started on the job, start doing family development services. Unfortunately, the process of recruiting that person and waiting for them to give notice means she won't start until the middle of next month. And we realize that there's no way that we're going to expend the money in family development this year and do it in a way that allowed the families to receive that comprehensive holistic service over time that's required for them to change their situation with a person who understands their situation fully. Meanwhile, we looked and, you know, we'll have, so far this year, $20,000 in emergency food expenses that haven't been covered by the asset funding agencies, again, because the level of service is so high. We're heading into summer, and ironically, use goes up in the summer because kids are out of school and eating at home more meals. And donations tend to go down a little bit in the summer. People aren't around, and things aren't as active in the Ames community as they are during the rest of the year. So we thought maybe a good solution if the asset agencies or the County Board of Supervisors in particular today would be to allow us to transfer that money to the emergency food program where we know we can use it because, as I said, we've already had $20,000 in units of service that were not covered by asset. So.
So the question comes back to you, Deb, again. I know last week at a meeting we had a similar request to reallocate some dollars from access. And again, the process that was followed through here, as I see the letter was submitted to you early on, you all have had a chance to kind of review this. And so what's your take on where we are? And
I haven't had a chance to talk to the other funders or the other administrative staff about this because of the timing of it, and the next claim cycle is the last claim cycle for agencies to get their claims in so that we can pay it out before the end of the fiscal year. So I expedited this request today so we could make sure and have it considered for that particular timeline. The question I have for Arlene is, if similar requests are being made to the City of Ames and United Way, because they are the other two funders in the asset process that fund FADS and the emergency food pantry.
We made a general request to the administrative team. I haven't heard from the City of Ames, and I haven't heard from United Way. We anticipate that we will spend out the United Way money, so that is not an issue. We do think that there could be a couple thousand dollars left in the City of Ames, and we'll have to follow up with that and see what they would like us to do with that.
And again, these are kind of unique requests. It's not something that we have to handle on an annual basis, but it is something I report back to the administrative team about to make sure they're in the loop with knowing what the agency requested and how it was handled by the Board of Supervisors. The other question, Arlene, I had too, was for families that were needing the FADS services, but they were kind of put in this holding pattern until staff were hired or in between the hiring of staff. How were their needs met? I guess that was a concern I have.
That was why we brought Stacy Mulford from Hardin County down, is to, I'll be honest, since this has been going on since last summer, we've lost some families in the shuffle. There's no two ways about it. Either they went on their way or they found other resources to meet their needs, or they just weren't interested in continuing. But for the families that we were able to stay in touch with and who wanted to continue the service, we had Stacy Mulford, our county director, coming down 2 days a week from Iowa Falls and spending 2 days a week here working with those families.
The other thing, too, that we weigh this against is, of course, the county's funding priorities that we use for the asset process. And it would meet the safety, health, and well-being of children and adults, and it would also meet the prevention and early intervention services that would help deter situations from becoming more critical and requiring more costly services.
So can I take that to mean that if Micah had made the request of asset to go ahead and fund the emergency food pantry right up front as part of the process, that is something that Story County would have met favorably?
Yes, and we already fund the emergency food pantry.
What do we fund?
This year, for fiscal year 12, the amount coming out of the general fund was $1,432, and that amount has been drawn down in its entirety prior to this request. And so it is a service we already fund, the county already funds through the asset process.
So indirectly, because of the increased need, there's a greater demand for the food pantry service, and so the dollars actually help goes to meet that overall need, basically. Is that my understanding?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we'd expended our allocation from the county for emergency food by September of last year. So that money went very quickly.
I know during the hearings process in January, two of the areas that Micah identified as their priorities were family development services and the emergency food pantry, just because of the numbers that they've been seeing in the utilization statistics.
Well, Board, prior to consideration of this request, I need to acknowledge that I do serve on the Micah Board of Directors. I've been past president in the past and currently involved now, and I've been made aware of some of the challenges that Micah has had with the reduced staff and turnovers and so forth. I'm not positive in this situation if I need to recuse myself from this one, but I do want to acknowledge that I think it is fitting with our mission and what we've done in the past. So I just want to get your feel for where you think I need to stand on this particular request that's coming before us, because obviously as a Micah board member, my hat would be in support of bringing forth this recommendation to the board.
Wayne, I'm counting on you sitting here today not being a Micah board member, being a Board of Supervisor. I've got total confidence that that that's what you'll do. And so I would encourage you not to recuse yourself, but just remind you that you're wearing your Board of Supervisors hat right now as we do this.
Well, I agree with that. And, Rick, if we were only had two members here, I would probably do that. But it only takes a majority of the board to support that recommendation. I don't want to put myself in a situation where there could be perceived conflict, even though I do understand I'm wearing two hats here. And I believe it is certainly, if I was on the other side of the table, I would be over there helping to bring forth this recommendation to you as a Board of Supervisors. So I just wanted to acknowledge up front that I'm comfortable either way, but I wanted to basically understand where you were coming from. If you were in a similar situation, how would you respond to that? Yeah. Paul, any thoughts from you?
Well, it sounds to me like you've probably already made up your mind which way you're going to vote. So
yeah, way I would vote if I was there. Yeah.
I tell you what. Well, let's come back to that in just a second. I've got a couple concerns. I think the first thing that I would say is I'm disappointed that we had the staff issues that didn't allow us to utilize these approved funds in a way to benefit the families directly. I'm curious if you could just help me understand how this dovetails with what DCAT does with their family team meetings and some of the work that Empowerment does and some of the other things we've got going. I want to understand that we're not duplicating services, and this is not to relitigate whether the $6,400 was an appropriate award. I trust the asset process and I trust our decisions there. So that's one concern on one side. And the other one I have is it feels to me like we're starting to go down a road, well, quadrupling. Asset process found it reasonable to allocate roughly $1,500 toward the emergency food pantry, and now we're talking about quadrupling that with a month left in the fiscal year because of external circumstances that didn't allow us to use the dollars for the intention that we approved them for. And that is not a critique of the worthiness. I mean, the emergency food pantry, it's really unfortunate that we're in a situation that it is being so heavily used. I completely recognize the additional need there. I'm just trying to sit here right now. We empower the asset process to really be able to analyze all these things and make the decisions of where the dollars fit best and how they fit best. And now it feels like both, and I supported what we did with Access last week, but both Access and this one, now we're making, decisions just before midnight on these things that we spend a lot of time and work to get them right the first time. So
Deb,
I just need everybody to do
this. Deb, why don't you go back and really kind of explain what we have done in previous years when we've had unallocated dollars so that your Rick and Paul is a little bit familiar with this. And usually the timing of that is a little bit different than what we're dealing with here. So I don't know whether this request is similar to what we sometimes do with unallocated dollars or not. You kind of understand where I'm going with that? Yeah.
Because of the way agencies are required to use the county dollars, they draw them down based on the units of service that they provided during the previous month. And the city and GSB are set up in a similar fashion. And there are years, and this fiscal year 12 will be one too, there are years where not all the dollars are drawn down by a particular entity for a variety of reasons, or as Arlene alluded to, dollars are drawn down in their entirety early on in the fiscal year just based on utilization and the need. So we have in the past, prior to the end of the fiscal year, looked at what dollars would not be utilized and then looked at allocating those dollars through the next fiscal year's process, and we've had the assistance of the auditor's office to help kind of earmark those dollars that those were in the asset process, they were not utilized, so we would put those back in the process for the following fiscal year. That's different than what we're talking about today, because today we're still in fiscal year 12, and it's been identified by MICA that The dollars aren't going to be used in this service area, but they could be used in this area over here.
Okay, but help me understand, though, that we have within the guidelines and our priorities that if it's dollars needed that fits within the priorities and is still within the allocation of the asset dollars for that capital year, we technically, even though we haven't done this on a regular basis, would be able to basically do so because the dollars would still be there, and then we would have to approve that based upon does it meet the funding priorities that are outlined.
Right.
Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Right.
And the reason why this type of request is coming to the Board of Supervisors versus the Asset Board is because the asset process for fiscal year 12 has been completed. And the asset board's work has been done. So and we have a contract. So any change within that contract now has to be addressed with the Board of Supervisors. So that's the purpose of the request coming directly to you.
What would happen to these funds if they weren't spent this year?
They would go back into the general fund. Mm-hmm.
And how do you see, Arlene, how do you see spending this money? If we do allow the transfer, how is it going to be spent between now and the end of the month, into June?
Well, as I said, what we would actually be doing is using that money between now and the end of the month, but we can go backwards and find families that would have been eligible that we used our donation money for, and then use that donation money going from now through September to keep things going. We had expended all of our emergency food money from all sources by December in assets. So, you know, that was money that was supposed to go for a year. And I understand the frustration. But, you know, as an agency, the other thing that happens is we're doing our asset proposal so far in advance of the year where we're going to use the funding that we oftentimes can't predict what the economic climate and so forth might be by the time that we're actually in the fiscal year where that's going to be expended. Clearly, we would have asked for a great deal more emergency food money at that time had we been able to anticipate how much that was going to increase. But I also understand, you know, this is unusual. We've never had to request this before, and we've been in an asset process since its beginning. But I understand that it's late in the process to be coming in and asking for this change, and I'm aware of the considerations that you have to make regarding that.
What's the criteria that a family has to meet for the emergency food pantry to qualify for the county funding portion of that?
We're really looking at families whose incomes are at or below about 200% of poverty and whose situation makes it clear that they currently have no resources, other resources available to buy food. So if they would be coming to us and they're eligible for SNAP or food stamps and they haven't gone and applied for that, we would help them facilitate them through the emergency food stamp process and give them, you know, food to get them through until that would happen. So if there's other resources they can utilize, then we make sure they utilize those first, but when there are no other resources available to them, and they can't come back in more than once a month. Those are the basic criteria.
Total budget, you said it was expended all by December, and I apologize for doing this. I'm just trying to get my mind around it. You said everything was expended by December. What was the total budget? You give it to me in rough numbers. I'm not asking for precise total budget for the emergency food pantry this year.
Well, from all asset sources, it was about $22,000 from all asset sources, with about $1,400 coming from the county, about $5,200 from United Way, and about $15,000 coming from the city of Ames.
And where are we currently? You said we blew past the $22,000 from those sources. What's total dollars spent in the emergency food pantry?
We've also expended another $21,000 in emergency food through donations.
Okay, so we're at $43,000 from a – okay.
And, you know, our fiscal year goes to September, so, you know.
Yeah, and I don't want to belabor this. I look at it and I say, okay, we and I will use $1,500 because I'm better in round numbers. We budgeted roughly $1,500 in the asset process. We blew through that in the first 3 months of the year because of the dire straits that unfortunately we're in right now economically. So that's a quarter of the year. So if you take that out for the full year, that would be more like another $4,500 that the county would be our portion, as I see it, as I'm going through and listening to what you're saying, the county's portion of this would be another $4,500 rather than the $6,500. Again, I'm not going to get caught up in this. I just am really uncomfortable with the process we're using to get this done. I don't know that there's a better way. I mean, I think this is why we're here and what we've got to deal with, but it just feels to me like a knee-jerk way for us to operate to get this done. That said, sometimes knee-jerk is, I mean, there's a reason that your knee jerks when the doctor hits you on the end of the knee. It's...
Well, Arlene, could you go back, first of all, to the process? You alluded to it a little bit, but when you seek funding from ASSET for the various programs, just like when we go through all of the claims and the requests for grants and so forth like that, usually there is a dollar amount, and we rarely receive 100% of the dollar amount that is requested. But we're making an educated guess at that time that would be sufficient to meet our needs. And in some cases, circumstances turn out to be that those dollars are not enough to meet those needs in that particular area. So what generally happens within an agency when that happens?
Well, you know, we have a lot of things we have to balance in that ASSET request, one of which is we know, you know, that ASSET can't increase by 100% something. They can't increase by 50% something. We know that when we go in there, we have to be reasonable in any increases that we're asking, and if we document it. But we're not going to go in and ask for a 100% increase or a 50% increase. We'll talk about it. We always have with the ASSET panel about the emergency food funding in particular and what's going on there in any given year because, of course, since we're so far behind in terms of what ASSET's funding versus when we requested that funding, there's always a discrepancy there. But the other thing is, these levels come from way back in time. I mean, why the county's paying $1,400 and the city's paying $15,000 is I couldn't even tell you. That, you know, at some point in time it was decided, well, you guys take this part of this and we'll take this part of that. And now it's kind of like we can't – last year – was it last year? I get so confused with asset years. We tried to readjust who we were asking money from for various services, ask more family development from the city of Ames and more emergency food from the county. I think that was in last fiscal year. And we were really criticized for doing that. We were told it's not our job to make those decisions. I mean, that was 2 years ago. It wasn't this last funding cycle. It was a funding cycle before that. So we tried to go in and make some kind of an internal adjustment to, well, gosh, maybe it should be more evenly distributed across the funders, the request, and then the increase more evenly distributed across the funders. And we were told by the asset board that they didn't like that. So, I mean, we have an issue, too, when it comes to how can we ask for more and from whom and for how much. And then we're aware of what the current fiscal climate is. I mean, there's just not nobody sitting on big piles of money that they want to give away. So, you know, all of that has led to us having requests at this level that partly is within our control but largely is outside of our control to say, okay, county, we would really like it if you would fund us at the $6,000 level. We could ask that. That's probably not going to happen in the asset process.
Deb, rationale behind that, I mean, as I look at it, when it comes to Ames funding part of a service and Story County funding part of the service through ASSET, there's got to be some consideration of Ames resident versus county resident outside of Ames, and that's got to be somewhat of the formula that we use to get to that determination.
Right, and we get that detailed information from MICA on all of the services that the county covers. And I guess just kind of in response to what Arlene was saying as far as when that change was made a couple of years ago, I think the concern from the asset board was looking at the entire budget and the expenses. It was looking like things were kind of being moved around and we really weren't sure how they were being moved around. And as Arlene said, there is a big balancing act here because they get a lot of state funding for programs and federal funding, and we want to make sure, with Story County being the largest county in their catchment area, that those dollars are appropriately allocated to Story County, so that anything that isn't funded by those dollars then can go through the asset process to support those programs. That's what I recalled anyway, as far as that conversation a couple of years ago.
All right, I'm ready to make a motion, and I'll see if it dies for lack of a second. I would move that we transfer $4,500 of the remaining $6,469 to the emergency food pantry. My rationale for that is, based on the $1,500 being used up in the first quarter of the year, that's an additional three quarters, assuming a lot of factors, but I can get there. So there's my motion. $4,500 of the $64,000. The remaining dollars would stay in the family development services to either be used or not.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and second that we allocate $4,500. And the remaining dollars of the $6,460 remain in the family development area to be used if at all possible. Further discussion.
I think the $4,500 is exactly what I had written down. Is probably closer to maybe where we should be funding it from the way it sounds. So that's the figure that I had written down also.
I was... as I was sitting here listening to it, being in a kind of an uncomfortable dilemma, one of the thoughts that went through my head is could we arrive at a figure less than what was requested that would be able to meet part of the demand, even though it wouldn't fully fund it? And I hadn't even put a pencil to a possible figure, but I think some is better than none, because it would be recognizing that there is this need and that we do have the capacity to do so. But I'm kind of thinking it's important for us as a board to understand the challenges that we're faced with the allocation process, and how, when that process ends and we receive these type of requests, how we navigate through that system. And I think some of it has to do with the actual service that is needed, is being provided, but a lot also has to do with what is the reasonable expectation of the dollars that we would allocate. And so I think your suggestion, I could support. I think it's certainly based on sound rationale and so forth. But obviously, I would my other hat would say I'd like to see the full $6,000. But with that, I would call the motion and ask all those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And I will reluctantly agree to aye as well. Okay, the motion passes.
I'd like to thank you. And I understand that the asset funders have a very complex situation that they're trying to deal with. And it's a system that's worked for a very long time. And we appreciate the support that we've received through asset. And we appreciate your consideration of this request.
Well, the only other comment I would add, too, is, you know, if there is, you've got somebody coming on board in June to provide family development services. So if there is that chance that they are working with someone that you can then bill the county for, you know, there's a little bit of money left there to cover those services if that were to happen. So thank you.
Thank you, Arlene.
And Deb, the only thing I'll say is, as you know, as now we've dealt with two of these, as we go forward, I would just ask that as we deal with others, the sense I'm getting is we're going to want rationale other than these are how many dollars that are there and we want to just transform from one service area. Some rationale to help us tie together kind of how we're moving the money and why. Okay? Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Okay. Agency report. Lutheran Services. Thank you. Welcome.
No, talk about wearing
talk about
hats.
Wearing different hats. I got caps, not hats. I got a couple of those too.
Hope you're all doing well this morning. It's nice to see you again. I am Lisa Heddens, and I'm here with Mark Roberts from LSI. And I would also like to acknowledge I have an intern, Susan Marcosi, who's here today. She's interning at LSI's People Place, and this is also her first supervisor meeting that she's attended.
Welcome.
It's a thrill,
well.
Isn't it?
We just wanted to provide you with an overview of the programs that you are funding at this time. I'm not asking for any budgetary changes, so that hopefully we'll make it a little bit easier for you and maybe the questions a little bit easier as well. In the packet of information, I provided you with just a little bit of a history of LSI and a timeline of how it came to be. Also, some of our new brochures that we have, LSI's People Place brochure, one of our crisis child care program, our human services, and then the disability services program that you fund as well. Just to talk a little bit about the various programs, People Place or LSI's People Place provides a variety of programs, some that you fund. The crisis child care program is one. I'll discuss that a little bit further. Our Parents as Teacher program, which is a home visitation program where we have a staff member that actually goes into the home and works with families of children that are at risk, birth to age 5. This is not a duplication of what Early Access does or the AEAs, but it actually complements because they have a particular focus of children with disabilities where we are not as focused on that particular arena, but do partner with them as needed. We also do our parent support programs. During the daytime, we have our ABC parent support and parent education group. We have a number of families that come into People Place, and they actually self-identify the topic areas that they would like more information on. And some of the topics that we brought presenters in for them on, we brought Barb Wolin in from ISU Extension to talk about financial literacy. And I know that's been a big topic, not only seeing what's been going on at the university, but just in general, the need for more financial literacy. We've had from both ISU Extension and from Hy-Vee do a nutrition program. And so we've had them come in and not only talk about nutrition with the families, but actually do some cooking with the families to look at what, when you have a low budget, what are some healthy nutrition meals that you can make for your family. Additionally, we've had in from Raising Readers and from the library as well. So really a wide range of topics. And I find that the parents really come up with some very good educational topics that they'd like to have. They additionally want to have someone come in and speak about gardening, and I think I need to sit down on that one because I definitely have a brown thumb and not a green thumb when it comes to that. Our MELD program we run in the evenings that goes twice a month with that group, and again, it is a parent-driven topic, but MELD is a national program, an accredited program that does have a curriculum that the families can follow through, and it really, when I say it's parent-driven, it's driven as to how in-depth not only that they want to go, but really is necessary to go through. We've had some families that have dealt with grief recently, a loss within their family, and so that has been an area where the group has spent an extended amount of time not only talking about how the family accepts grief or deals with it, but the children as well. And how do you work with your kids when they're going through a situation like that? Or it could be other safety situations, not only stranger danger, but just looking around your home on safety issues. So it has really been a good group. I've sat in on it a number of times to just hear the discussion and the facilitation and the benefit that the families get out with it. With all of our programs, we also provide child care. So not only do our day programs, but our evening programs, we offer child care as well. And we have not only staff members, but work-study students and volunteers that have come in to provide child care. And all of them go through the necessary background checks and trainings, additional training. So they've all have had mandatory reporter or CPR first aid training as well. So we feel very confident with the staff and the volunteers that we have going through our programs. Lastly would be our crisis child care program. And our crisis child care program serves families of children 0 to 12 years old that are in a crisis situation. And To date, we've served about 40 children, about 22 families that we've worked with. And it's very hard to know when you're doing from a budgeting practice or standpoint how many families are going to fall within a crisis situation, because the nature of the term crisis, you don't know. Last year, there was a little bit higher utilization of crisis child care. This year, it's been a little bit less in utilization. One thing we have been utilizing, or I have been doing since I came on last year, is really defining what crisis is. I know in the past there's been some question of has the utilization actually been a crisis situation. I believe Supervisor Sanders, you and I were in a meeting together and had talked about some of the, when I first came on at LSI, some of the planned crisis and saying, well, how is that necessarily a crisis when it's planned? And so really narrowing that, our staff member, we have one staff member who's on call 24/7. We do utilize licensed daycare providers. We have some in all over Story County, not just in Ames, but all over Story County and some in Boone County as well, who provide the care. They've all stayed retained with us. We actually are increasing the number of daycare providers. We've had some that have contacted us saying that they would like to be a crisis child care provider. So we feel very confident in having the providers that we can take the children to. One of the things we have noticed as well is not only with the crisis child care or the need for crisis child care, but kind of that gray area where some families actually are needing some respite care, but not necessarily crisis care. And that is something we'd really like to look at for this next year of how could we define that a little bit more of saying, you know, we want to make sure that we're funding those are definitely in need and those they have no other alternative in a crisis situation. But there are some families who do fall in that area of just needing some respite and really not having someone else that they can go to, but it hasn't risen to the level of a crisis situation. But if they don't get that assistance, it could later arise to a crisis situation. So those are just some areas that we would like to look at further. We've done a lot more collaborating with Access. And with DHS, we have a very good partnership with DHS. They oftentimes will call us for placement of a child into crisis care before putting them in, for example, like foster care is what they would prefer to do. So we've got a really good collaboration with that. I know that Mark here will talk about some of the disability services that are provided as well.
Okay, my turn. Certainly, our involvement with disability services isn't quite as broad as what we have with People Place, but given that the vast majority of the people we provide supports for are eligible for Medicaid and Medicaid-funded, there are some gaps, however, as I know you're aware. Some individuals may qualify for services but not yet be receiving Medicaid or Medicaid-funded eligibility. And in those situations, the county ends up filling in the gap on that, as well as providing supports for some individuals who may not qualify for the ID waiver but may have a developmental disability. We've certainly heard about how the restructuring may impact that. But as far as our involvement with asset funding, the amounts we kind of work on projecting are encumbered amounts that we bill the county for if the service need arises. I would provide, to kind of give the quick broad overview, the supported community living services as well as respite services for adults and children.
Questions?
You know, I would just add that we do a lot of quality assurance and receive input from individuals who receive our services. All have been very positive. I would say the families who have contacted us in regards to crisis care, it's been overwhelmingly, so have really appreciated having that. I received an email from a woman who had utilized our crisis care service, had been in a domestic situation, and just, you know, was a profound thank you to us of not knowing what else she would have done with her and her two children, being new to the area, you know, trying to look for a job, get housing, and just the whole mental state that she was in with her circumstance really shows that it was a worthy program.
Okay, good.
I'd just say I'm a big fan of LSI and the work you guys do, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good.
All righty. Moving on to departmental reports. None. Okay. Liaison assignments. Anything? Paul?
I'm not sure if this is where this would fit, but I want to talk a little about the structure of our agenda, and know that, you know, we set this stuff at the beginning of the year, but I had a question last week from one of our department heads as to, you know, we've had a couple meetings now that have really gone on a long time, and we've had people sitting in the audience waiting for us to get to a consent agenda item, and the question was raised, why isn't consent agenda and personnel actions up at the top of the agenda? And I didn't have a good answer. So I wanted to bring it up. I mean, as I look at it, it could easily reside just immediately under public comment. And I didn't know, Wayne, probably more for you, I didn't know if there was some rationale that we had toward having consent agenda and personnel action items at the end of the agenda rather than at the beginning.
I think it had a lot to do, Mr. Sanders, with us going to that two meetings. Remember, we had the informal meetings at the start of the year, and then we moved down to the more formal at the bottom. Well, when we merged and went away with that, I think what we did is we just kind of took the agenda as it was somewhat presented, and then moved the bottom portion, which the consent agenda really fell there. I don't think there was really much thought or rationale as to where it would be best placed at that point, but I would assume that that might have been the easiest transition.
I know the Board of Health does their consent agenda first.
But just, it was something I hadn't considered a whole lot until, you know, we've had these 2-3 hour meetings back to back, and we've had people sitting here for nothing more than us to get to a consent agenda item that we're not going to discuss, and they just want to see what the action is. And so I don't know what's involved if it's appropriate for us to adjust, I guess, the order of our agenda, and if it's something you guys would support, I would like us to move consent and personnel actions up as high on the agenda as we can so that we can dispose of those items, and anybody who's waiting on those can get back to work rather than sitting here for items that they don't need to be here for.
I would agree with you. Is it appropriate to discuss it today, or do we want to put it on the agenda?
We'd have to put it on the agenda later for our discussion.
You
just brought it up as a point.
We're not.
I would like to look at whether or not, timing-wise, would it be better to start with July 1? Just, again, something to think about if we're going to make the change. I don't think it matters. I just think that we probably need to put this on the agenda for some type of formal discussion if we were planning on moving it to any other point. Normally what would happen is, like any board, I could, with a request from someone in the audience, we could move something up, but I think when it's published in this manner, we try not to do that as much as possible. But I don't see that as really being that much of a big issue to have the consent agenda placed early up in the thing. So I think it could easily be done.
Might I suggest that we check with Steve Owen and see if it takes any kind of formal board action to rearrange our agenda, or if that's just something that
we can
do by directive.
I think we can do that by directive personally.
And if we have the power to do it by directive, then it means to me that we don't need to have notice to anybody that we're talking about doing. We just need to ask that Shelley rearrange the agenda. If we're agreed, rearrange the agenda and move those items up just below public comment, number one.
Well, I'm agreeing with you in that regard. However, it wasn't on the agenda for an item of consideration. That's my only question, is would it be proper for us to go ahead and make that?
Well, and what I'm suggesting is we check, if we're in general agreement that's a decent idea, check with Steve Owen, and if it's something that the board has to take some kind of action on,
we
get it on next week's agenda,
right,
and we take action.
Right.
And if it's not, if we're all in agreement, then we just ask that Shelley rearrange the agenda if Steve Owen informs us that it doesn't take board action.
Yeah, I'm with you. With you. I think it would be a simple request. Yeah. Okay. I have nothing to report on the liaison. Okay. And now we're moving to employee other reports, consideration of personnel action. We have one pay adjustment, longevity, union contract, secondary roads.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of the personnel action as submitted, along with the one that was there for the CLP individual. So all those in favor of personnel action indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Personnel action approved. Consent agenda. All items on the consent agenda good to go?
Move approval. Second.
Been moved and second the approval of the consent agenda. Hearing no further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Public forum number two. Items from the audience on topics not on the agenda. Anything? Aha, I was waiting on that. Okay. All right, since there's no one, then I'll move on. Announcements from the supervisor. Mr. Toot?
Pass.
Yes. I'm going to leave here at 11:30 to 1. The conservation, Linda Zalatel, is having a retirement party. She didn't want a really a big retirement celebration, so the conservation board and staff is putting together a little informal opportunity for her out at the conservation center. So I'm going to head over for that. And then this evening at 4 o'clock, serving on the Iowa Municipal Workers' Comp Board of Trustees, I will be a part of a strategic planning conference call. We have a facilitator coming in to lead us through for our facility retreat. And as a result of that, I'll just be answering some questions at 4 o'clock this evening. So with that, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Moved. Second.
Been moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. And note that we got out.